The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week I spoke about a teaching around how the Buddha saw us as human beings, how he viewed us as not a person so much, but as a collection of processes. And this teaching that I talked about last week is called the Teaching on the Five Aggregates. And I'm kind of going to continue the talk a little bit today, because last week I spoke basically about those five aggregates, those five processes: the process of form, the process of feeling, the process of perception, the process of mental formations, and the process of consciousness. And today I'd like to continue the discussion around that, particularly around how these five processes relate to what we typically think of as me, as self. So I'll start with just a brief review of what these five processes are. The process of form is really the process of the body, the process of the physicality of our experience. The process of feeling is the process around which the... So actually, let me say one other thing. These five aggregates, one of them has to do with physicality of our experience. This is form. And the other four have to do with mental processes. So I like this teaching as kind of a contrast to another common teaching around our psychophysical being, which is the teaching on the six sense doors, which breaks us down into our sense doors of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and then the sense door of the mind. And so that one really focuses on five aspects of physicality and one aspect of mentality. This teaching on the five aggregates reverses the emphasis and goes into a little more depth in exploring the processes of the mind. So there's this one aspect of the physicality, the process of physicality, and these four aspects around how the mind does its thing. So there's this process of feeling, a process whereby we meet experience and know it to be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So this isn't in terms of feeling emotionally. That comes in a different category. But it's really a very bare aspect of this recognition of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. The aspect of perception is this process by which we recognize things. We recognize things. We recognize shapes and forms. We recognize people. We recognize objects. We recognize sounds. We recognize things we touch as being hard or cold or soft. We may, if we have our eyes closed, be able to identify objects by just kind of touching them. So there's this process by which we recognize. And this process is called the process of perception. It's very related to our memory, how that we remember things that we've experienced, and from that memory we recognize what we're experiencing now as it matches with our memory of things. So that's the process of perception. Then there's the process of knowing, which is basically just this process by which we recognize not the objects, but that we are experiencing something, that we are knowing something. So well, I'll go into an example in just a moment. And then there is this process of mental formation, which is basically the process by which we shape our experience. And this includes all the ways that we respond to experience, including decisions, choices, and reactions. So things along the lines of the emotions come into this category, our likes, our dislikes, our responses. So right now, just to kind of take you through these in an example, in this process of hearing that's happening for you right now, as you're sitting here listening to my voice, there's the sound waves and the impact of those sound waves on your eardrum. And both of those aspects, the sound wave and the eardrum, are considered part of form. So without those, we don't have an experience of hearing, and that's the aspect of form in the experience of hearing, the body and the object that it contacts. From that impact, from that contact of the sound wave with the eardrum, there is a recognition of hearing that's happening. At a very simple level, there's just the recognition hearing is going on. That is the aspect of consciousness, of knowing. Just a simple, bare recognition that hearing is happening. Perception recognizes the words, understands the meaning of the words. So that's the process of perception. The process of feeling is responsible for whether there's a sense of a feeling tone to experience, whether the feeling is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral around this hearing. And then the mental formation aspect of experience is responsible for any response that we might have to this hearing, whether you agree or disagree, whether there's interest or boredom. So it's basically, this mental formation aspect is responsible for any decisions, any attitudes, any responses to this experience. So this teaching often sounds kind of technical and perhaps abstract in a way. Why be interested in these five aspects of experience? And the Buddha pointed to a reason for taking an interest in these areas of experience, that these five processes are basically five of the main ways that we create a sense of self, that we identify with these processes as I, as me or mine. So we're encouraged to understand these processes, to get to know them so we can understand how they serve kind of as magnets for identification, for clinging. This is really what might be called this identification process around these five areas is what might be called this process of selfing. The Buddha called this I-making or mind-making, that we do this as a process. And what we typically consider to be me is simply a process that goes on in our minds. And this process that goes on is actually part of this category of mental formations. But we tend to have a sense of ourselves as being somehow enmeshed with these five processes. So there's this relationship of ourself with respect to these five processes. And one teacher, a monastic scholar, wrote a book that had a section that talks about these five aggregates, and he had a very beautiful way of pointing to how we see these five processes as ourself. He said that we, and this teacher is Anilayo, he wrote a book called Satipatthana. It's a commentary on the four foundations of mindfulness, the Buddha's instructions on meditation. And he said, with respect to these five aggregates, that form or body is where I am. That's what we consider. We consider the body is where I am. Feelings are how I am. Perception is what I am recognizing. Mental formations are why I am acting. And consciousness is whereby I am experiencing, the means by which I experience. So these five processes, these five aggregates, are essentially components of what we typically think of as me, as I. And when we start to see that these as components of this notion of self, it begins to undermine the belief that this self is a solid, stable entity. So a good place to explore this idea of self, this belief, this view in self, is to ask yourself, what is it that you consider to be yourself? So I want to hear some thoughts about this. What is it, to reflect, just what is it that you take to be yourself? Anybody? Okay, Jeannie in the back.
This body, this being, I think, is the totality of my hearing, all the senses, and the physical body, and because my relationship to it.
So the physicality, the physical body, and your relationship to it is kind of where you feel self is. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
When I was a kid, everything was myself.
Everything was yourself.
And as I've grown older, less and less so.
Thoughts and memories.
Thoughts and memories. So the particularly, I think, memory, often we connect to self because it seems to carry a thread for us of continuity, a sense of kind of there being something that has traveled through time, that memory has. Is evidence of that, essentially. Memory is evidence of that. Yeah, in the back. Yeah.
I would hazard a guess that it has to do with the five aggregates, but it seems to be constantly moving and flowing from one to the other. And how conscious am I of that? And when I am conscious, am I myself, or am I observing one of those aggregates that
yes.
is the self?
Yes, that's exactly kind of the flow of the direction I'm going to be speaking of today.
Moving around.
Yeah, yeah.
Your point that I would, having a lot of trouble with my personality, which is very stuck, which is the definition of things which I can do and definition of things which I absolutely cannot do.
So the notion of this I being connected to agency of things I do and can do and can't do.
And all the emotional states that go along
and
with
all
that.
The emotional states. Mm-hmm.
Then just really stuck.
So Bill and then Stephen. and then we'll stop. Yeah, Bill.
I still struggle with this. I see how my self, so to speak, is in flux and changes quite a lot. But then I also see aspects of myself that go back to childhood, my personal interest, my inclinations that lead to my interests, hobbies, career, and so forth. And that has remained with me very much. It gets stronger and weaker over time. It's not as strong now as it used to be, some mm-hmm. of my interests, you might say. But as I look back to my childhood and earliest childhood, and I see it popping up. I don't know where that came from, if it's part of my DNA, so part of my permanent self as long as I'm alive, or from a past life, or environmental. I don't know what that is.
So there's a sense of, again, some kind of continuity of something that carries an interest, you know, something along those lines, that there's this...
There seems to be, yes.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. And Stephen?
I have a little song.
Okay, go for it.
If a Rupa meet a Rupa, building up the eye. If a Rupa kiss a Rupa, need a Rupa cry. Every Rupa has its nama, none they say have I. Yet all the khandas smile at me when building up the eye.
That's great. Thank you, Stephen. So I'll add a couple that I've felt over time that haven't necessarily come up directly. One that particularly strong for me, and this I think came up a little over here, is that I am the one who chooses. I'm the one who decides. I'm the one who has some sense of control, that there's that aspect of control to this feeling of I choose, I decide. Then there's the I that feels like I'm the one that knows things. I'm the one that feels things. I'm the one who experiences things. So when we look at this, what we think of as I, what we think of as self, when we turn to it and actually try to define it, what is it that I think of as self, to pin it down, to actually identify it, it usually has this kind of quality of kind of being a group of things, as some people have said, you know, my whole body plus my responses, my reactions over here, my ability to do or not do, and all my emotions around that. So there seems to be a kind of a grouping of things that we think of as self. If we try to pin down what we actually mean of by self, we have some trouble. It's more of a feeling. We all have this feeling that I am. I am. It's a very pervasive feeling. And it's pervasive in the way that it just feels so obvious, but when we turn to look at what that feeling is, it doesn't really submit to observation very well. It's kind of hard to pin it down. So it's not so easy to point to what we really mean as self. And if in coming up with a definition of self, somebody then says, well, but there's contradictions in what you're saying, you know, that how can that be self because X, Y, or Z, as I'm going to go through some of the reasons why the Buddha goes through all of these aspects that we think of as self and points out, well, this is why that can't be self, and this is why that can't be self. So if somebody does that for us, we think, well, then there must be something else that's self. We don't really take in the fact that, well, maybe there isn't a self. The feeling of I is so pervasive that it's very difficult to believe that it might not actually be a thing. So the Buddha articulates this sense of self as arising out of different ways of identifying with these five processes, these five aggregates. And he has essentially four ways that we identify with each of these five aggregates, leading to 20 different ways that we construct this feeling of self. And I'll just go through this really briefly. So, for example, around the body, these four aspects of identification include feeling that the body is the self, feeling that the body, feeling that the self possesses the body or owns the body, feeling that the self is in the body, or feeling that the body is in the self. So various combinations of these identifications, of these four ways of identifying with these processes, produce these feeling, this feeling of self. So it's this identification process, which, as I said, falls in this area of formation, of mental formation, processes of the mental formation process of the mind. It is this identification that produces this feeling. So, for example, a sense of thingness, or a sense of something that is carried through time, might have to do with the identification around body, that there's this body that has been here since I was born. Well, it's changed, obviously, but there's been this body. There's some continuity, seemingly, around this body. So that identification process around the body can produce that sense of thingness. The idea around memory, of there being memory, and the memory that I have being the evidence for there is something that has traveled through time that is existing. That's kind of identifying with this area of perception, of recognition, of remembering. I'm the one who decides who's in control. That is an area of identification around the mental formations. This aspect of our mind that chooses, that the process by which choice happens. If we start to look at, if we turn our attention to what we take to be self, we actually look at it, we find that this notion of self has different components. As I pointed to with what Analayo says, body is where we are, feelings are how we are, perception is what we are perceiving, consciousness is whereby we are experiencing, and formations are why we are acting. So, we don't really recognize these components. And we tend to kind of have this vague feeling that there is this I somehow in all of these components. So let's look at just a couple of these areas. One that the Buddha really highlighted and pointed at was this one around agency, around this notion of control. And he, in his first discourse on anatta, the second discourse he ever gave, he pointed to this lack of control as being a kind of prime evidence for the fact that there is not a self. So he says, and I'll just read this around one of these five aggregates. He says, form is not self. For if form were self, this form would not lead to affliction. And it would be possible to say of form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. But because form is not self, form leads to affliction, and it is not possible to say of form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. Likewise with the others. We cannot say of our feelings, let my feelings be thus, let my feelings not be thus. We wish we could. I know there are many times in my experience I've felt I don't have any control over what I'm feeling. You know, that the the habitual pattern around a particular emotion is so strong that if I get anywhere in the vicinity of that, I get locked into that pattern, and extricating it from myself from that pattern is not a thing that I have much control over. So can you decide how you feel? Can you decide what consciousness pays attention to? Now this one, I think this is an interesting one, because there is some way that there is a sense of choosing. Like, for instance, right now, I can say, can you pay attention to the sensations of your hands? Can you pay attention to the sensations of your feet? Can you pay attention to the experience of your lips touching? It's not very hard to do that. There is a sense that there is that ability to attend, to choose. But it's not, it's a little bit under what seems to be some kind of control. But think about how the process of meditation works. You sit there, you choose, you decide, I'm going to attend to the breathing. And what happens? 2.5 breaths later, you're not attending to the breathing anymore. Who did that? Who chose that? Habits and patterns chose that. And then the moment when we remember about the meditation again, coming out of a wandering thought, boom, we pop back into awareness and we remember again about the mindfulness. Who did that? How did that happen? Again, it's causes and conditions that come together to make these things happen. So we have some limited, or there is a sense of some ability to choose. And I think this is where a lot of our identification comes from, is that there is some agency, in a sense, around directing attention. There's a feeling of control that we can choose. But if you actually look in your own experience around what you take to be self, and ask yourself if you have absolute agency over it, you will find the answer is no. And why is that? Because things are conditioned. Things are a result of causes and conditions. Our experience is conditioned. Our choices are conditioned. Another aspect that the Buddha explored is the sense of permanence, the sense that that sense of somethingness that exists, the sense of solidity, the sense of continuity, that there is something that is here. So that thingness itself implies at least some partial notion of permanence. So again, the Buddha suggested looking at your experience, look at each of these aspects and really reflect, look at, is this permanent? Is this experience permanent? We might be inclined to say in this exploration that, well, whatever we experience is impermanent, but there is a self that experiences all of this impermanent stuff. So there's that sense of continuity. So listening to this teaching, you might have some doubts about this, whether this is really the case or not. And in fact, it's particularly difficult to listen to this teaching and not have doubts if you're listening to it from the perspective of self. So you might not, in terms of the five aggregates, you might not have a sense of the five aggregates in your experience. And even if you do, you might still have a sense that there is some kind of stability or permanence in there somewhere. This idea of self creates its own sense of permanence, of stability. You might feel that this teaching on the five aggregates doesn't really capture the entirety of your experience. And so what I suggest in terms of exploring this is to look back at what it is you think of as self, where I started this conversation with. Look at that feeling, seeing if you can look at it without taking anything for granted about it. That can be challenging. Can I look at that feeling without assuming that it is something? So exploring this feeling of self in our mindful meditation in daily life through this process of mindfulness, turning towards this feeling. What is it? What am I taking to be me right now? There's a... I'd like to kind of make an analogy around this exploration, around a comparison to observing pain in our experience. I know many of you have explored this, that when we first start to look at painful experience, it feels pretty solid. It feels like it's a thing there. But when we turn our attention to it, when we actually direct mindfulness to the pain, we can't really pin it down. It moves, it shifts, it changes. It's only when we're not really looking at that solidity, when we're not looking at what seems to be solidity, that it feels solid. When we bring our attention to it, it becomes this shifting, changing experience. You can't actually put your attention on the pain. You might find a little place where there's a strong sense of sensation, and then suddenly that place, the sensation is gone, and there's another place where the sensation arises. So there's this shifting, changing experience that we have when we bring mindfulness to pain. And it's a similar kind of experience when we turn our attention to self. It feels solid, it feels thing-like, only when we don't look directly at it. So when you try to find it, try to pin it down, you find it shifts and changes. That what we consider as self isn't something that is solid. It is a process. It is a shifting, changing experience. It can be really interesting to explore this at times when self is very obvious. There's times when, you know, we're kind of going through life and, you know, there's a feeling, a kind of a vague feeling of I, but it's not like in our face. There are times when it's in our face. For instance, a feeling of self-righteousness. Somebody does something, it's like, I have a right. Here it is. Okay, this is a great time to pay attention. Turn and look towards what is that feeling of self-righteousness and what's underneath it. Where is the self? Where is what you are identifying as self? There are bodily processes happening. There are mental processes happening. Which one is what you think of as self? When we explore this, we start to see that at least in my experience, when I explore this, I began to recognize that there are particularly familiar feelings in the body. It's like, yep, that's me. That's Andrea. Yep, that kind of accumulation of particular familiar feelings, emotions, etc. That's me. That's what feels like me. And there seem to be a bunch of those familiar feelings. There's the familiar feeling around anger. There's the familiar feeling around friendliness and connection. And the question is that familiar feeling, is there some continuity under that familiar feeling? We impute a continuity under that familiar feeling, but they're different feelings. The feeling of anger, me angry, is very different from the feeling of me friendly. As we explore this in our meditation, it becomes really clear that there's just these different feelings that come into being that we give the name of self to. I had one experience that really pointed this out to me on one retreat. It was a 3-month retreat, and there was this one person who often would ask these very convoluted, detailed questions in the hall in the morning. And I got kind of annoyed with this guy. And I felt like I understood something that he didn't understand. And I would find myself in meditation having arguments with this guy. It was I think I was around 40 at the time, because I remember it being the 40-year-old me, the 40-year-old analytical one who knows. That was that feeling. Very familiar feeling. And one day I was doing walking meditation outside and immersed in this feeling and noticing it and not really wanting to be immersed in it, you know, recognizing this feeling and trying to, you know, to be mindful of this feeling of this 40-year-old analytical argumentative self. And a truck drove up, a very loud, noisy truck. And it came, stopped right next to me, and this, the brakes squealed and the door slammed. And in a split second, I went from being that 40-year-old argumentative person to being a 2-year-old. It's a truck! Wow! And, you know, my whole experience just shifted. And I became this different thing. No relationship between these two. No relationship. Very clear that there was not a continuity between those two. So what are you taking yourself to be right now? Are you the one who is listening? Are you taking yourself to be one who is listening? Are you one who is thinking? What is the thinking? What is that process? Are you one who is feeling? Or having a sense of emotion? If you look for the one who thinks, listens, feels, experiences, you won't find it. And as Joseph Goldstein sometimes says, the not finding is the finding. So we have a couple of minutes if there's any comments or thoughts or. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm struggling with this a little bit. So I understand the changing nature of whether it's the mind, the feelings, perception, so forth. But what if I identify with the body and the mind that perceives these things?
That's when I said that you might have a sense that the self is the one who is experiencing all of this stuff. Again, just turn to that. Turn to that feeling. Now, there is a story in the suttas that I particularly like to recall, that this understanding of this teaching on not-self comes in stages for us. There is the recognition around what is called identity view, which is this recognition that I am not found in these aggregates, that I am not my feeling, I'm not my perception, I'm not my consciousness, etc. But there is the story, was a story of a monk who was questioned by some other monks, and he was being questioned essentially about his attainment. And they were asking him, well, do you consider these things to be yourself? And he said, no, I do not consider any of these things to be myself, but I still have a feeling that I am. And that feeling that I am, that kind of vague feeling I am, is not said to dissipate until one is completely, fully enlightened. So that feeling, that feeling I am, this monk that gave this, was being questioned by these other monks, gave an analogy. He said, well, if you look at a flower, he said, the flower's got all these parts, and it's got the stem, and it's got the petals, and it's got the pistils, and it's got the stamen. He said, would you say that the fragrance of the flower is the petals? No. Is it the stamen? No. It's the pistils? No. Is it the stem? No. So you can really see that the fragrance of the flower is not the parts of the flower. At least this was the analogy. And that, what would you say? That the fragrance is from the whole flower. And so that's more kind of that sense that I am this whole kind of thing, and that there's this sense, this vagueness around that. And that doesn't, that seeing through that is the deepest insight that completely liberates us. So there's a kind of a staged understanding. So exploring your notion of self, some of these really obvious notions of self are easier to tease apart. I mean, you know, that we have these feelings, I am the angry one, I'm the miserable one, I'm the happy one. And we really can begin to let those fall away over time. This other notion, this more subtle feeling, I am, that will be with us for a long time. But keep turning towards it. Keep turning towards it. What is it? What is it that you actually think of as I?
Can I follow with a simple example? Maybe it's a little silly example, but if you think of a transistor radio, it's the physical object, and it has a sensing system, and the airwaves are full of vibrations that it senses. So in a similar fashion, I have a body, I have a mind, and I'm like the transistor radio. And my relationship with the world changes as things change around me, but I identify with this. So is that a self?
It's
a transistor radio.
It's a notion of self, I would say. It's an idea of self. And that's where we need to turn, to look towards without any... As I said, without any taking anything for granted, can you drop or let go of the assumption that I am in just turning to experience? And we have to stop. So it's been a delight to be with you for these weeks this month.